Welcome to the Last Sunday Podcast, where we discuss last Sunday's sermon at Majestic View Church in beautiful Kiowa, Colorado. Senior Pastor John Smith talks with Kyle Peters to answer questions, provide clarity, and take a deeper dive on some points from the sermon. This is your chance to be a fly on the wall for personal discipleship. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Good to be back.
Look forward to this time every week.
I do too. It's a good recap for me on the sermon. It's a good, especially when we do it earlier in the week, it kind of sets up the rest of my week. And I find myself later in the week, this is the bad part about doing it earlier in the week, is by later in the week, I'm like, I need to do this again. You know, I need to have this conversation and relieve some thoughts from my brain. So it's really good for me, and I'm glad that you enjoy it as well. This week was the joy of being a star, and when I read it, and as you started speaking, I was thinking star clicked as celebrity in my brain, and I think that's two very different things, but also kind of intertwined there. You know, I mean, the joy of celebrity, I'm not sure that really exists as much as we like to think it does. But I think we think it does.
Yes, it's something we all pursue.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the sermon, and I'll start at the end before we get to the beginning.
All right.
Because I think it's very appropriate. I mentioned that when you're evaluating light, mm-hmm. Now notice I didn't say lamp.
Okay.
But when you're evaluating light, I mean, a woman will look at an antique lamp and say, this is beautiful. Or she'll look at another lamp fixture and say, I want that in my home.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the light, which is the actual part that is illuminated,
right.
You don't look directly at it. If you do, you'll be blinded.
Right.
And so when we talk about being a star, as like I was talking Sunday with that wordplay,
mm-hmm.
We're talking about shining. We're talking about having the light of God, the light of Jesus Christ in us. And the last thing that you want with that is to draw attention to John Smith or to Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
You want the light in you to illuminate the way for others, not the way that you see, but the way that the Lord wants it. So if I'm truly shining as light in a dark world, it's not look at John Smith, it's look at Jesus. It's look at the truth that Jesus Christ, look at the love of Jesus Christ. So that truth by itself is what it all hangs on and where we were trying to get to on Sunday.
Yeah, I think there's, again, that wordplay there with star, and stars emit light, but we can look at that word in two ways, like I said, like celebrity, and I think it's very easy for us humans to say, I want to be well known, I want to be, for the things I've done. You mentioned a musician or a baseball player, and as you said that, you felt like you kind of alluded to singular events, but those are careers, and that's you don't get known. I mean, you might be known for your one hit wonder, but that's it. That's incredibly shallow. It's even more shallow than the temptation of celebrity anyway. But you look at, baseball, Pete Rose just passed away, but a career-long legend, marred with some issues there.
Well, he's a perfect example of what I was talking about.
Okay.
And I think what's important, the focus after he played when he got into his gambling situation,
mm-hmm.
put the focus on Pete Rose. It put the focus on the compromise that he made and mm-hmm. and the way he broke the rules, okay? Mm-hmm. Before that time, and by the way, just for full disclosure, when I was a boy, Pete Rose was with Big Red Machine.
Yep.
And I had a buddy, one of my best friends, that called me or texted me when he found out that Pete Rose had died.
Okay.
And he said, and he actually would call me Charlie Hustle at times.
Okay.
Because I played the game like Pete Rose. Now, Pete Rose's action as a player
mm-hmm.
motivated me to play harder.
Right.
Pete Rose's actions when he compromised and as a person caused me not to even want to be associated with his name.
Right.
And that is so what we're talking about.
It is. Although the way I was, and I hadn't thought of it in that way, but that's very true. I was thinking, you know, even if it's a baseball career, even when he was a positive role model, it was still Pete Rose.
Absolutely.
But if we're not being the celebrity kind of star, the Kardashian type of star, or the Pete Rose type of star, but we're being the light-emitting star, we're being known for putting forth, advancing God's kingdom and His word and His mission, we might not even be known.
That's right.
At all. And that's good. It's not a bad thing at all. You know, we were talking momentarily before we started recording about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a totally different kind of celebrity type of star, but also the light-emitting star. I mean, I read his book, and I know we've mentioned it a few times now, and it's just such a powerful book for me at this point in time. But I read the book about him from Eric Metaxas, and that's inspiring to me, much like Pete Rose was to both of us as young fellows out on the ball diamond. You went much further and have continued with it to some degree, and were probably a whole lot better than I was, but it's not the point. You know, but beyond that, you know, a different light emitting there, and he's leading others. What are we at now? Geez, 80 years beyond his death almost, and he's still influencing people and bringing people to God.
And I think what we're talking about here too is that when it's right, when you are truly putting off light that motivates other people, that's what it does, is it motivates other people. It shows other people the way, and it helps other people to know they can be that too,
mm-hmm.
that it's available to them. When you are somebody that is standing on a stage and all you're getting is screaming, yelling fans in front of you that are hysterical because they're in the presence of this person, that's a totally different thing.
Absolutely.
And it's heady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that are doing it, it's not only just heady stuff, it's also very lucrative stuff.
Yes,
in this world that we live in. So people are thinking about not just fame, but fortune. And oh my goodness, we're not talking about fame and fortune here. We are talking about being a part of God's plan to make other people's lives better, for them to know the one true God.
Yeah, so as you mentioned that, the biggest celebrity of our time right now, I think, is probably Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-billionaire at this point. And she stands up there, she sings bubblegum pop songs that have no depth to them, and people are paying hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to stand there and scream at her in her presence, as you said. And what value is she returning other than some entertainment? I mean, she's not, and I know I'm not her demographic by any stretch, but she's not giving me the value in my life that reading about Bonhoeffer has.
No.
And I say that not to disparage Taylor Swift, because it's not my place, and she's doing her thing. It's fine. And I don't know what else she does in her life other than what I see, of her on stage. So I could be speaking completely out of turn. But I don't get that from her. And what it makes me wonder is, what am I doing with my life? Am I standing on a stage getting accolades, or am I doing something meaningful like Bonhoeffer did?
Well, and at the end of your life, the fact is that our lives are just a moment in the timeline mm-hmm. of eternity. And at the end of your life, whether it's 80 years or it's 37 years, mm-hmm. which was Jesus, and Bonhoeffer was close to that. He was in his 30s when he was executed. The fact is the ongoing impact of Jesus Christ and Bonhoeffer. Why? Because he was like Jesus. Because he tried to live with the light of Jesus Christ in his heart, and he did. Mm-hmm. And he touched people. There was one of the guys that was with him after he got arrested, and just the last days. In fact, he saw him the day he died, I believe. If not, he saw him the day before. And he talked about he had never seen anyone face death with the courage, with the calmness, with the joy that he saw in Bonhoeffer. And today we celebrate that man because of what he stood for what he did, how he changed people's lives, he inspired others, but mostly because he glorified Jesus Christ.
Funny how the parallels there to, was it just last week, with Paul in prison? Same thing, right? I mean, in adverse situations, in adverse circumstances, they say, hey, it's okay. I can handle this.
Look at this guy.
And the rest of us say, wow, look at that man. Look at Paul in prison. Look at Dietrich in prison about to be, I mean, maybe he didn't know tomorrow was his last day, but still, maybe he did. So how does that work for us normal folks, us not Dietrich Bonhoeffers, not Apostle Paul's?
Well, God doesn't call some of us to die at 37. Some of us, you know, he may let us live to 95
right.
or 100.
Hopefully.
But the point is this. What is God's purpose? Mm-hmm. How can I glorify him? And am I faithful with what he wants to do? There are pastors. We picked on Taylor Swift. Let's pick on pastors for a minute now. There is a temptation amongst most preachers when I ask people, have you ever thought of becoming a star? Well, I grew up in a church that was no larger than 65 people. And then toward the end of the time I was there, it began to decrease. And we were good to have 35, 40 folks on Sunday morning when I left to go to college, okay? And so there have been times I've thought, would God ever call me to pastor a church of 1,000? Or 2,000. And I see these young men that are doing that, and I go, wow, I wonder what that's like. Because we all can get caught up in the numbers game. We all can get caught up in, well, if my ministry makes this impact, then that means that I've had a great ministry. And I'm not talking about settling for just being mediocre when I say what I'm about to say. But the issue is not how many numbers, how big our congregation is, how many millions of dollars we raise and put into God's work. The issue is how faithful are we to represent the true nature of Jesus Christ to those that God brings us into touch with. And a perfect example of how that's so true is that Dwight L. Moody, one of the great evangelists of history, mm-hmm. was led to the Lord by a Sunday school teacher. And he was in a class of half, you know, maybe a dozen boys. And that man was faithful to those boys. And he showed them who Jesus was. And who's going to get the great reward in heaven? The man that led Moody was faithful in the little things. And as a result, his life touched untold thousands of people for Christ.
I had a conversation the other day of that mentioned the World War II generation as the greatest generation. And it's a common refrain these days. And my argument was against that, strangely enough, was no, that was not the greatest generation. Their parents were the greatest generation. Because had it not been for their parents raising them the way they had, they wouldn't have been that way. They wouldn't have signed up to go out and half of the country to fight off. We're staying right in a generation here, I see, with Bonhoeffer and fighting the Nazis, and all of our men predominantly going off and fighting that same war. And half of that population, that generation, staying behind, raising the children, keeping the home front and the factories running and whatnot. They didn't get that way on their own.
No. They were taught some amazing values. You know, and I made this statement Sunday, and I think it's so true. The true test of my ministry, the true test of your ministry is not how many people I speak to on Sunday morning. It's not how big Majestic View Church gets. The true test is what is the fruit of the lives of those, and what do they do as a result of the teaching that God and the heart that I try to give to them that God gives to me. So I have to know, okay, today I may do something that's very menial, but and it may be a physical act instead of something. Oh, that's very spiritual. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, that may impact the kingdom of God in a way that I could never imagine. We lost a son at 5.5 months. Mm-hmm. When God sent me to the church in Arkansas where I was pastoring, that church was very divided because of some very sad circumstances. And God sent me to that church to try and help heal and bring that church together. I preached, I taught, I tried to love them, I tried to encourage them. And then God gave Deb and I Joel. Joel's name, Joel means Jehovah is God. Joel lived 5.5 months. And through Joel's life and his death, he did more to bring that church together than I did in 4 years. That little boy was God. We actually put on his tombstone, God's little preacher. And he never said a word.
Said a word.
He couldn't speak. He could barely make a sound because of the disease that he had. And so I never forget that, how God can use. Joel couldn't move on his own,
right,
because of the disease that he had.
And so look at us with all that we have. What are we doing?
Yeah.
And to that point, and what you were saying before, you never know. We never know what impact we're going to have. Which I think means we've got to stay on our A game 100% of the time.
Well, I think
as much as we can, obviously.
And what is our A game? Our A game is trusting the shepherd. Our A game is every day trying to come into the presence of God and be with him, because it is through that he changes us. It's through that we have that light that will impact other people.
Well, and you spoke to being negative as a person too. And I know that is something that I fight within myself all the time, because it's so easy to fall into a trap of gossiping, complaining. I really feel like gossip is probably the biggest thing, like the easiest trap to fall into. And I'll so that you and I are on the same page, and everyone listening can be on that too. For gossip, I follow the Dave Ramsey definition of gossip. Any negative thing said about someone, not in the room, to someone who can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just sitting here griping about my wife to you for no good reason, that's not helpful. That's gossip.
Absolutely.
But if I'm asking you, saying, I have a problem, how do I fix it? That changes the equation, because it changes my heart and my approach to the conversation and why I'm saying it.
Well, and the Bible does talk to us about how that we are to seek wise counsel. And so I don't know how wise it would be, but you if you were doing that, you would be seeking the counsel of your pastor, okay?
Right.
That's very different than you bellyaching and just griping.
Right.
Not looking for an answer, just looking for somebody to say, oh, poor, poor, pitiful Kyle.
Right.
You know, that's sad. But we all can be guilty of that, and at some point in our life, 99% of us are guilty of that.
Well, and I just have to, I mean, I've never met anybody who wasn't guilty of it at some point in time or another that I can think of. But it's catching yourself and stopping that action, saying, oh, hold on, I'm just griping here, and I should stop that. But that's, as you stated, that's removing the light. That's removing our positive influence on the world.
Yes, it's tarnishing, or it's
tarnishing the mirror.
Yeah. It's putting a lens over the light that dampens it. It mutes it. That's the word I'm looking for.
There you go.
And so that light is no longer bright. The older I get, the more physical light I need to function.
Right.
I don't do well in darkness. I don't do well in low light. It makes all the difference in the world with my eyesight if I have bright light. The best thing in the world I can do to read a book, if I can't see it well, is go stand in the sun, which is the ultimate light that we have in this world. And so, but we have lights in our house at the, we have a 100-year-old house, but we have lights in the way the rooms are designed, and there's some rooms I just can't function in very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't like that. It's not enjoyable to read a book into that circumstance or whatever it may be. So our goal is to represent Jesus Christ. Paul said, now then, we are ambassadors for Christ. And what is an ambassador do? He lives in an embassy in a foreign country, and he is representing those who sent him.
Hmm.
We are ambassadors for Christ. So if I'm going to represent Christ, who is Christ? He's the light of the world. He is love. He is life. He's the water of life. And what do all those things do? They are essential to us living a good, a peaceful, and a joyful life. And so if I'm representing that, then I'm being a faithful ambassador. And then Jesus just called us the light of the world. And it's like, wow.
So I think then it's every one of our responsibilities, but I'll speak to myself personally that I need to be illuminating whatever room I'm in.
That's right.
And if I'm not, then I need to change myself, which is something else that you said that caught my attention, that if you can't follow Jesus, change. And that I think those things go hand in hand. If I'm not illuminating the room, then I'm not following Jesus. Because if I was, I would be. And something's got to change.
Right. Well, we use the excuse that that's hard.
It is.
Or that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. That's not my nature.
I'm pretty sure I've said that before.
Me too. And what the Lord is saying to us is, you need to change your nature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't change my nature. My natural default mode, to use a computer term, is pretty ugly. You know, I mentioned earlier that I was called Charlie Hustle by a couple of my friends because of the way I played baseball. That's my nature. But my nature in the flesh was very, and can be, very prideful. Look at me. Look at what I can do. Mm-hmm. I can outwork you. I can out-hustle you. And because of that, I can beat you.
Yep.
And I just said the word I how many times?
Exactly.
And that will, well, just like Pete Rose did, he made people mad.
Mm-hmm.
And he did things that were very agitating. Well, when I live my life that way, and not in the love and the humility of the Lord Jesus Christ, then I was not casting light. I was putting all the light on me. And it's not that we're not to be go-getters for Jesus. It's not that we're not to be energetic or passionate about the Lord Jesus Christ. You know from the way I preach that I'm pretty passionate at times. It's not that we're not to be that way. It is that we're to be that way, though, with humility, with love, with a focus that nobody questions, that we are trying to exalt Jesus instead of ourselves.
The humility line is a recurring theme here for us. And as you were saying that, I was in some ways being a bad listener because I was planning ahead. And I changed my path right as soon as you said that a little bit, because I was thinking, well, Jesus was an agitator. And agitation can be good. I was listening to an interview with an old mentor of mine, David Grossman, who's written several books on a wide, kind of a narrow field in a way, but also a wide range of topics. One of the ones he wrote most recently was on spiritual warfare, and talking about self-defense and military. He's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, and so speaking to his past there and bringing it forward, I'm like, well, there's a lot of agitation that happens there, and isn't it our responsibility to protect ourselves and those under our care? That's the ultimate agitation, but it's with humility. That changes that equation in my mind.
Sure. The great example of that in Scripture is David, King
right,
David.
Right.
Because David was a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he took down a Goliath. That's pretty agitating to Goliath.
Heck, just the lion.
Well,
it
was agitating to his brothers.
Right.
They accused him of being prideful.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the same David that when he was at the peak of his kingship, he committed a hideous sin.
Well, he lost his humility.
Well, for a bit.
Right.
And then when the prophet came and told him the story and said, "You're the man." Well, first of all, when he told him the story, he gave him an illustration of a man that had all of these sheep, all the lambs that he could possibly want. And then there was another man that was very poor and only had one. Well, the man that had all the sheep decided he would steal the sheep of the one.
Mm.
And when David heard that story, it just rocked him. And he looked at the prophet and he said, "That man shall pay fourfold for what he did to that." And then Nathan the prophet looked at him and said, "You the man."
Yep, that was you.
"Thou art the man," is what the King James says. But here's the thing. David could have had Nathan's head cut off and nobody would have blinked. And David said to Nathan, "You're right. I'm guilty." Mm-hmm. And he was completely broken before the Lord. That is humility.
Absolutely.
Now, Christ didn't have to humble himself in that way because he never sinned. However, he became sin for us, the scripture says. He endured the death of a criminal on the cross, and he gave himself up willingly to pay for my sin. In Philippians 2, we talked about last week, he made himself of no reputation. His reputation, who he was, he's God. He's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, but he did not think that was important for him to demand, to seize. And so he humbled himself and became obedient unto death. So there's that humility. And if we live our life vibrantly for God, passionately for God, charging proverbially the gates of hell,
right,
then the most important thing is, are we doing that with humility, knowing that it is not by our might, it is not by our power, it is because that's what the shepherd wants us to do, and we are following him wherever he wants us to go. It's not my plan. It's his plan.
I think, again, that humble nature, the concept of it, I feel like this is grammatically incorrect, but thinking about it humbles me a little bit. It puts me in my place to say, why do I do the things I do? What am I seeking in life? And for what purpose? And then how do I approach everything, quite frankly, just everything, you know, from parenting my children, to what purpose, so that they can, I think this was a conversation from the last couple of weeks of, so that they can make a lot of money and I can put them up on my trophy shelf, which I fortunately don't really have, but I can see where, you know, you put your children up there. Look how great that my children are. Look at the great car I've had, the great house I've had. Or am I doing it so that they're good people? Am I being a good husband to my wife for the same reason, or is she my trophy wife?
Yeah.
Look at the beauty. Now, it's easy for me to say that, that I have an awesome trophy wife, because I do, but that's not why she's my wife, and that's not how I try to treat her in person. She's my wife because she's my partner in life and raising our children and hoping that someday they're good people and good followers of Christ and good contributors to society. That's thinking of that way. I mean, that is why we make a lot of the decisions we do, but at the same time, expressing that I feel like it knocks me down a few pegs.
Absolutely. Well, we've been talking about this, so I'm just going to mention it, and it'll bring it back to people that are listening, but we've talked about being followers of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
calling ourselves followers of Jesus, not calling ourselves Christian,
right?
But followers of Jesus. Now, I'm not ashamed to be called a Christian most of the time,
because I agree with
that would be because of what men have done to the name.
Absolutely.
Now, there's something I wanted to say, picking up on what you were just talking about with your wife.
Okay.
I've often said to men that the greatest compliment I can give you is if I look at your wife and I see a sparkle in her eye.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of attractive people that when you look them in the eye, they were dead.
Right.
The thing that attracted me to my wife first, before we started dating, was her enormous, beautiful eyes and the sparkle that was in her eyes. And do you know who the person is that can take that sparkle out the quickest? Me.
Yep.
When I'm not loving her, cherishing her the way I should. You see, God made women to be responders, and that's just their nature. And so she's going to respond to whatever I'm giving her and whatever she's getting from the Lord. And so when a woman has a sparkle in her eye, I often think, I said, wow, she's got a man that's loving her. And that doesn't mean a woman has to have a husband to sparkle. So
right.
Please, ladies, don't turn off the radio, you know.
Absolutely. Or
don't turn off the podcast.
Right.
But when she is married,
mm-hmm.
that is a huge factor, because that relationship is so important to her. And relationship is important to her.
It is.
And so that sparkle is a huge, huge compliment to her husband. Or
her father, or...
Yeah, or a huge condemnation.
Yes.
And back to where we've been talking about this whole time, about light.
Mm-hmm.
For all of us, not just our wives, but for all of God's creation... When we have the sparkle of light in our eyes, that you can't make that up. You can't produce that. That's something that comes from deep within.
It's not acting.
It's not a pretend thing.
Yeah.
And so that's our goal, is to let the love and the light of Jesus Christ live in us. And that's what real joy is. It's not happiness over what happens. It is the peace, the deep peace and joy that's down deep in our soul because of who we know. And it's okay. It is well with my soul because of who lives in my soul.
The last line I wrote down here on my notes from this last Sunday was, leaving a legacy is leaving the light of God in others. I'm not sure that was a verbatim quote of you, but that was the last big thing that I got from the sermon on Sunday. And I think we kind of just touched on that a little bit.
Yeah, we have a little bit.
That's it's the impact that we individually have on the world. It's illuminating the room when we walk in there, and not just in a make it happy way, but make it better.
Sure. Way. Well, throughout your life and throughout my life, we've had people that impacted our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the sweetest memories that we have are from that piano teacher, that coach, that for my wife, it was a choir director that dramatically changed her life and her ability to be an accompanist. And for those that know her, know how good she is at that.
She is good at it.
And an accompanist is like a picture frame.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice the accompanist, then you've missed it. There's something wrong. It's out of balance. And when you look at a picture, if you say, wow, look at that picture frame. You know, you don't look at a Van Gogh and right. say, look at the picture frame. You know, you look at the magnitude of the picture, okay?
It should complement it at most.
But perhaps. What Deborah would tell you, and I heard her tell somebody that this weekend, is that she had a choir director that was very strict about what he expected and gave some very definite foundational principles about what should be in the mind of someone who was accompanying somebody else. And she was talking and glowing. She said, he was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But she is so thankful for how that ingrained in her. And it was really a foundation for teaching her how to be a servant of people. So whether it's a piano teacher or a choir director or a coach, sometimes it's just one statement.
Mm-hmm.
Or one event that is burned into your memory, and you go, wow, that was a life-changing moment for me because that person gave me light.
And how many chances do we have at that? And moments do we have like that? We'll never know that we had that impact on someone else.
There was a coach that I had. This story is one of my favorite stories of my baseball career. I played through high school.
Yeah.
But this coach, I remember when I was 7 years old and stepped on the field in front of him the first time. I was scared to death because he was a legend. Mm. Everybody knew about Mr. Wallace. And he was pretty stern guy. But can I make the team? Am I good enough?
Right.
Well, I made the team.
Yep.
And then years later, he didn't coach me all the time, but I got to play on his teams a couple of times, which were the delight every time I did, because, man, I knew I was getting the best. Mr. Wallace got cancer and was dying of cancer. And he came to one of my games, and I don't know who brought him to that game. I'd like to think he came to watch me play, but anyway, he came to that game, and he was so sick that he had to get one of those lounge chairs, not a regular lawn chair, the lounge chair, so he could lay back. But he talked his wife into letting him come, and there he is, right behind home plate, in his lounge chair, watching the game. And it came up at a critical point in the game, and I hit a home run. But it was an in-the-park home run, so I had to run to make it. And when I crossed home plate, Mr. Wallace was standing there holding the backstop, cheering for me.
Very good.
Now, this is the man
who could hardly stand.
That could hardly stand. But right. He's also the man that I was scared to death of the first time I met him.
Yep.
But he was standing there cheering me on. And as he was dying, I went to his hospital room and we talked about Jesus and came to know that he had trusted Christ.
Oh, very good.
And I'll never forget Carrollton Wallace with having to grip the chain link fence, but so he could cheer Johnny as he crossed home plate.
Fantastic.
He was light that day, bro, and it still shines in my heart, as you can tell by looking at me.
Absolutely. All right. I can't think of a better way to wrap this up. I'll ask my normal question next week.
We're going to talk about Paul's partners in ministry. I don't know what the title's going to be yet, but probably something about partnership. And we're going to look at Philippians chapter 2 and the end of the chapter where he talks about Timothy and Epaphroditus. Two very different men, and he says two very different things about them, but they were both dynamic ministers with him and to him.
Fantastic. Well, I'll look forward to that indeed. All right.
Well, thank you, bro.
Thank you. This has been fantastic.